Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Serena Bellissimo, Brian Lloyd and Jean Smullen join us once again. Hello. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi.
I'm going to ask you a controversial question,
sure.
Brian. Because the two films, obviously, are Exit 8 and Michael. Mm-hmm. Should we be reviewing Michael at all?
That's a very, very good question.
Yeah.
I will say this. The film, if you weren't surprised already, does not even touch upon, no pun intended, the allegations surrounding Michael Jackson.
And there was a reshoot, apparently.
There was. The Jackson estate had to cough up, I believe, somewhere in the region of $10 million to reshoot the ending of it, because what happened was Michael Jackson paid out a settlement to one of his alleged victims, and part of that deal was that the alleged victim could not be named or be mentioned in any communications or any kind of anything that was associated with the Jackson family. He, the person in question, apparently exercised that part of his deal, so they said, yep, fine, we'll reshoot the whole thing. Now, I heard another report I read that said that the Jackson family themselves were not happy with the finished product, because the original film did mention the fact that these allegations were coming, because the film goes right up to the release of the Bad album, and he, right when those allegations came to light, and the family didn't want that in anyway. So there was a kind of a question of, did the person in question force the reshoots, or did the Jackson family themselves want to reshoot it? It's a deeply, deeply strange film. I'll just say that. Like, it is a deeply, deeply strange film. So,
yeah.
Like, no, really, like, really, really, really weird. I'm not over hyping this. Like, it's bonkers, some parts of this film. Like,
yeah, I know. He's never been convicted of anything, but all the multiple accusations, and I can't think of a person who is analogous to this, but there's probably other people.
Gary Glitter.
Would we be reviewing a Gary Glitter? But he's been convicted, so I suppose that might be a difference. But is the key difference, Michael Jackson's just a much better musician, and no one wants to let go of that music.
And he has lots of fans. Like, this is a thing, right? So Gary Glitter doesn't have fans. I was telling Brian before we walked in here, and Jean, 15 of my mates are massive MJ friends, fans. We can talk about anything except Michael Jackson. They will profess his innocence. They don't believe anything that's being said. And I think that's why Michael is still being celebrated, because there's a big proportion of people who don't believe.
But as I said, I mean, he was my generation. I mean, that was the music I danced to in discos in the 70s, right? But I don't, I mean, I wouldn't, I have no interest in going to see it. I think unless you're a diehard fan, I don't think my generation are going to go and see it.
See, this is it. Like, the generation that are going to see this and that will get something out of it is George, your daughter.
So I took my 15-year-old with me to see this, saw it last week at the premiere.
The premiere, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And it's funny, because when you go to a premiere, it's very different. You'll say this as well, but
seeing totally
it
different.
In a critic's room, it's just the critics.
It's very dry,
The premiere has buzz and stuff. Now, I was bouncing off her reaction. Sean, she hasn't stopped listening to Michael since we came from that film, and she's going to go watch it again with her friend tomorrow.
Yeah, but does she know about the allegations?
I started talking to her about that stuff.
Yeah.
So I've let her know about that stuff.
I don't know. Maybe you can just separate these things, because it's not as if, like, James Brown, like, beat the living crap out of any woman he was involved with.
And this is it. Like, are you going to, like, are you not going to watch, like, you know, Chinatown, for example? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can you separate Roman Polanski's work from Roman Polanski, the man?
Yeah.
And again, this is a man that was convicted of statutory rape. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is as clear cut as that. Yet, you know, stop anyone who's interested in films and ask them about Chinatown, and they'll wax lyrical about it for hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Myself included. Like, so it's
a hard one.
It's a hard one.
It's a hard one. Anyway, Exit 8, no woke agonizing over that one, I assume.
No.
Okay.
No, lib woke agonizing over that.
Okay.
Thanks.
And what are the two wines we're going to be talking
come
about?
On. Today, spring is here. Summer's arrived.
All right.
Finally.
I still don't believe it.
It's 18 degrees when I was driving in.
But we're in our short sleeves and Sean's still in his cardigan.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Anyway, to get back to the wine, we're going to do do white, some lovely, from Green Spain, from Galicia, we have a wonderful Albarino, and a Grillo from Sicily. So summery, light, you know, easy drinking white wines.
Okay. So, like, is this, do I understand this correct, Serena, that like the alien in Project Hail Mary could get an Oscar?
He deserves it. He deserves it. He's so good.
Okay, I'm so glad you say that, because when I saw the headline, I was like, huh? Like, he's a rock. I don't understand.
No, he's not a rock. He's an alien. His name is Rocky, okay? Yeah, get
and,
it right.
And yeah. You know, I do love that because of my connection to Rocky, right? Yeah. So I do love him. James Ortiz is the performer and the puppeteer behind the alien Rocky. They're saying that possibly there's no specific rules at the moment within the Oscars that say he cannot be nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Now, they're saying that there are a lot of skills that he brings to it, like there is the puppeteering, but apparently, before they even recorded any of the stuff, himself and Ryan Gosling would actually rehearse the scene together, not as Rocky, as himself. So there's a lot of acting going on. Does he really say that much in the film, though?
He does, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, so like, he's speaking.
He's speaking, yeah. So what's going on? So
I don't remember a lot of speaking, bro.
Oh, he does. Like, he has, like, there's whole catchphrases now. Amaze, amaze, amaze.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, Rocky
hate... Oh, bump fist.
Yeah, fist my fist bump. Yeah, and Rocky hate Mark and all the rest of it. Yeah,
okay, I'll give you that.
Like, there was a whole thing that, like, the guy who did it was... he's a very good improv, very good improv actor. So he was improvising with Ryan Gosling. And because, you know, Rocky doesn't have a face, so they don't have to worry about matching the sinking it up or whatever. Your man could just basically riff all the time at Ryan Gosling and stuff like that. And that's really like the heart of the film, I would say.
Yeah. Look, it'll be interesting. Usually what's happened before in the Oscars is if there has been an outstanding performance or outstanding visual effects or something that they're like, wow, that's a piece of art that needs to be commemorated.
Yeah.
They've gone and given a special award, a special recognition award. So they've got a year to figure this out. What are they going to do? Are they going to do a special recognition award? Are they going to change the rules?
Or well, there's no rules to change, you see. This is it, because like SAG-AFTRA credits puppeteers and actors the same way. So, okay, fine. He wasn't, you know, on the poster, so to speak. Not as in his name, but like Rocky was. Sorry, that's my phone. But it's, you know, he could be credited as a supporting actor. Like, I don't think they have to change anything for certainly not with the SAG Awards.
Yeah, anyway. Theoretically, if you voiced an animated character,
you could be nominated for that.
It's never been done before. Although the guy who did R2-D2 was given a special recognition award.
Yeah.
So look, there has been ways around it. I don't think any of us in this room or anyone who's seen the film will complain if he gets nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I think it'll be interesting.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
It's very good. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. No.
You'd love it.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
It's worth seeing on the big screen.
Yeah.
Like, if
you're
going to see this, see it on the big screen.
Yeah. Right. Why are they making Miami Vice again?
I don't know, but I have to say I had the same feeling until... it was announced it was taking on the parts of Miami Vice. We have got Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
And Austin Butler, who are going to play Tubbs and Crockett. And do you know what? I would have been not going. I will watch anything that these two are in.
Anything?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything. Well, actually, I lied. I didn't say Sinners because I'm scared of horror.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
I just can't do horror. But yeah, so apparently production's going to begin this year.
Yeah, but it's more importantly, it's Miami Vice 85. So we're talking shoulder pads and rolled up sleeves and no socks in the shoes.
No
Jan Hammer.
Socks. Neon, that cool, oh my gosh, the cool hairstyles that they can rock. I think this is going to be brilliant. And this is...
they had blow dryers bigger than their guns.
This is Joseph Kosinski, who's come off the F1, the movie, and Top Gun Maverick. So I think... this is going to be fun. I can see this being a summer blockbuster next year.
Definitely.
And us all going on. Can you imagine the outfits that are going to come out to watch this?
And the soundtracks as well.
Oh, the soundtracks.
Because I suppose, the original series made hits out of...
Phil Collins.
Absolutely.
That whole sequence.
Yeah.
Huey Lewis.
Does that mean we'll see a biopic of Phil Collins coming out after this?
I would watch a Phil Collins biopic. I would bet that would be really, really interesting, believe it or believe it not. I think it would be like Elton John. I think he has enough kind of purchase now that he can say, yes, I was a terrible person.
Did he not divorce his wife, Cassandra, by fax?
That, I don't know if that's true, but okay. I don't know. Yeah, but that was the story.
The
yeah.
rumor. The
that
rumor
was the story, yeah.
But, but he has, yeah, he's had several careers since a child performer and then Genesis. And
is he a child performer?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, wow, I only know him from there we go. This time next year, we could be talking about Miami Vice 85.
We'll talk about that. Can we please stop treating accusations like convictions? We have courtrooms and juries for a reason, says Kane Wickler. You're right. The multiple allegations made against him were all equally fictitious to each other.
And the fact that he paid out $25 million to one of his alleged accusers is not at all... You know, that has no weight whatsoever.
There's also the fact that Gary Glitter is still alive. I think it's a pretty big factor, says another texter. I don't know. But somebody else makes the most compelling argument that Michael Jackson movie is brilliant. Just enjoy and get over yourself with all the allegations. Well, there you go. There you go, Your Honour. Case closed. What wine are we drinking first, Jane?
This is an Albarino. And Albarino is now the eighth most popular white grape on the Irish market. But this isn't from Rias Baxas. This is from another region called Ribeiro, which is actually one of Galicia's oldest denominations. It was first awarded its DO in 1957. This is a very, very good quality Albarino. It's made by a female winemaker and... Sandra Cortez, and she's a bit of a Spanish rising star. She started her winemaking career in 2002. She likes to make wines in a very aromatic style, and she ferments mostly in stainless steel tanks to preserve the aromas. And certainly the characteristic of the Albarino grape is that lovely peachy note. That's what makes people, gives it so much appeal to people who love the grape. The other thing is acidity. It's like Sauvignon Blanc. It has an awful lot of acidity. So what you actually have is people who like that aromatic Sauvignon style love Albarino because it has a slightly different flavour profile. Mm. With Sauvignon, it's all tomato leaf and citrus. With Albarino, there's more peachiness to it. So this actually has quite a, like, if you smell it, you get the lovely, and there's a lovely minerality on this. It's called Antonio Gonzalez. The DO is Ribeiro. The vintage is 2025. And you'll get this in O'Reilly's in Cabinteely, the Wine Pair in Clanbassel Street, McEntee's off license in Kells, Cooper's Bottle Shop in Clontarf, and then mostly from boutiquewines.ie, who import this wine. This is absolutely super. When you try it, yeah, there's a lovely weightiness to it.
And yeah,
you get
it's lovely. Yeah.
Gorgeous peach character showing. And the lovely, and the acidity isn't like searing. It's not completely, taking over your mouth. It's gentler. So summer is here. Yeah. Go out to the back garden, pour yourself a glass of this and watch the sun go down. What's not to like?
Yeah, indeed. Right, so Brian, shall we just jump into the controversy after the break?
Just go
okay.
For letter.
Michael, coming up after this.
I know you've been waiting a long time for this. The tracks are made. The songs are ready. Let's take it from the top. This is your story. Honor your past. So you wanna be starting soon? And embrace the future. That's what people want.
Q, can you lower the lights for me, please?
Okay, but remember, in here, keep those feet still, my man.
That's Michael there telling at least part of the story of Michael Jackson. Before we talk about the actual story, the central performance is his nephew.
Mm-hmm. Jackson.
Yeah, is he a good Michael Jackson?
Incredible. I mean, there are parts of this film where it looks freak. It is unbelievable how much he looks like him, especially around the off the wall area, kind of way. Like, they really, really got like such granular details down. You know, even down to just like, you know, the shoes or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it was really like there's a scene in when they're doing the Thriller music video, and even the guy who looks like John Landis looks. I was like, did they actually get John Landis for this? Like, what the hell? Like,
yeah,
because they shot it in the actual spot where they did the music video and stuff. You know, as a technical exercise, yes, this film does succeed. Your man Jafar Jackson, he's Jermaine Jackson's son. He looks freakishly like him. He has the dance moves down. They used, like, you know, unheard kind of like stems, recording stems, to kind of get certain parts of the film, you know, accurate and what have you. The live set pieces as well, like when they do, like, you know, the Victory Tour, which was the last tour that the Jacksons did, looks incredible. I mean, and then you're listening to it and you remember how good his music was. You know what I mean? Like, you can't deny the musical talent that he had and the infectiousness of it. You cannot deny any of that. The problem I had with Mike, and I should preface this by the way, I'm the same as you. Like, I loved, like, I grew up in a house that played Motown religiously. Like, you know, the Destiny album was just blasted nonstop when I was a kid. So, like, I was around Michael Jackson music a lot, and I've loved it for years. But it is impossible. It is impossible to have a film about Michael Jackson and not, you know, mention any of these allegations, because they are such a big part of it. Now, the film goes to great lengths to say, you know, he was a victim too. His father, Joseph Jackson, had coercive control over him.
All of which is true.
And he himself, when he was alive, Michael Jackson talked about it a lot. The fact that his father regularly beat him. The fact that he had no childhood to speak of. That he was on the road from the ages 6 and 7 and 8 years old. They don't go into specifics. Like, I mean, we were talking about it off air that, you know, allegedly his brothers, you know, this is Jermaine, Randy, Marlon, Tito and all the rest of it, they would all be in the one bedroom, and the lads would allegedly would be having relations with fans and all the rest of it, and he would be stuck in the room.
And he's like 7.
Yeah, way too young to be experiencing any of that. None of that is mentioned. None of that is mentioned. So, you know, even if it was to possibly go towards talking about something like that, they don't do it. Yeah. What they do, and what really I found so strange, they made real emphasis on the fact that he was a healer and that he loved kids and he just wanted to be around kids and help them. Like, the film will literally pause for 5 minutes and have him signing autographs for young kids. Or when that famous incident happened when he burned the top of his head during the Pepsi ad. Yeah. He goes to the burn, when he's in the burn centre, he then goes into the kids section of the burn centre and meets with all the kids, and he's all like, yeah, you know, I've got my hair burnt as well and it's okay and we'll figure this out and blah, 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 blah. Like, they make the point of saying, yes, he was around kids and he was really good to kids, but he never touched them or anything like that. That's never mentioned. And then the thing that really, really weirded me out, the bit with Bubbles, his pet chimp.
Mm.
The film pauses for 10 minutes and wheels out a CGI version of Bubbles, the chimp. And the scene where they first meet for the first time, I mean, it has such an odd quality. It is almost like lovers meeting for the... I'm really not exaggerating this. It's like lovers meeting for the first time. And, like, I think it's human nature plays in the background and he picks him up. And you're just like, what are we doing?
My 15-year-old looked at me at that stage when Bubbles came into and just went, huh? And there was this, like, giraffe walking around the state as much.
Well, that brings up, because I suppose when he was alive and before all the allegations, he was also regarded as kind of weird.
Yeah,
very weird.
Does the film deal with that?
It touches on that.
But this is the thing. I think what they are trying to do is have their cake and eat it too. Which is what I mean by that is that it's like, yeah, he was a bit of a kook, but he was a good guy. Case in point. And this is the thing that, again, bugged me about the film, was that there's a scene in it when it's the first night of the recording session for Thriller. And, you know, he's on his own. The scene starts off with him, close up of him, and he's talking about, you know, like, you know, I love Quincy and I love these songs. And, you know, he's affirming himself and all the rest. And then the camera just pans left and he's talking to a llama. And then he just, like, pets the llama. And he's all like, yeah, it'll be okay, man. And then he walks away. And it's like, I know, like, the director, Antoine Fuqua, he's clearly playing that for a laugh. But, like, I was watching it, I was like, that That's so sad. He had no one to share this moment with. He had to share it with Lama, but you're playing it for laughs.
Was he like, playing it for a laugh, though? Because
It felt to me like it was being played for a laugh.
I took all of this, I was saying to Brian outside that this isn't about the film. How they want you to feel after you finish watching this. You want to feel empathetic for this guy. You also want to go, wow, we've lost. And there's no denying that he was an enormous talent. So it's like, we've lost an enormous talent. And, oh my gosh, I was dancing away and singing to that. And again, no matter how you feel about the man, you are brought back to that 10-year-old girl who was dancing away to Thriller or frightened of Thriller. And there is a moment where you're like, oh, this is really great, until you take yourself out of that emotion and go, So I think it's more about the emotion than it is about anything else.
It's manipulative then.
Very manipulative. Yeah.
Estate games, like, they look to make a lot of money from
this. Yeah. And don't, like, be under no illusion. They all stand to profit from this in a big way. I mean, this is tracking to earn like 150 million worldwide on its opening weekend. You know, if they do end up making a second film, which I don't think they will, you know, it's going to be 20 minutes long. Like, there's no way they can make
There is a hint at the end of the
film.
There is a hint,
I mean, the end credit, the final title, it says the story continues, ... And like I said, it ends on, you know, the release of the Bad album, the Grammy performance, him winning all the Grammys, his moment of triumph and all the rest. And then it's like, bang, that's it. We're cutting it right there.
But there's no Janet in this?
No Janet. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is another
thing
as well.
Weird.
Yeah. So Janet Jackson has said she does not want to, has no mention of the film whatsoever. LaToya Jackson is in it, though. She constantly
references. She comes across as an angel in this, and you're just going, but Reba, I think there's another sister as well, and Paris has actually come out and said, Paris Jackson is his daughter.
She said that, you know, this film is just for, you know, fans, and it's going to make a certain subsection of fans feel great and whatever. Like, she doesn't really kind of have anything to do with it. I mean, personally, myself, they could have made 10 different films out of this. They could have easily made a film out of, you know, him creating Thriller. You know, give me Rod Temperton, give me Quincy Jones, give me, you know, the interpersonal relationship with the Jacksons. The fact that, you know, like, again, and this is the thing, like, you're watching this and, like, there are parts of this film where it's like, oh, that's really interesting. Talk about that. And then it goes on to the next one. Like, did you know Jermaine Jackson, he left the band and stayed in Motown because he married Berry Gordy's daughter? That's fascinating. That's like, wow. No, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, this was this family unit and he left to stay with Berry Gordy's daughter.
Well, actually, a lot of people married relations of Berry
Gordy. Marvin Gaye,
famously. Yeah. So, like, but not for very long.
But again, this is the thing. It's like, okay, there's... You don't want to talk about the allegations, fine. Zero in on one thing and just talk about that. Don't try to cover his whole life, because this film, like I said, starts in Gary, Indiana, ends with the Grammy performance and everything else. You're going to cover everything, but you're only ever going to be just like, yep, that's there, that's there, that's there, that's there. Like, you may as well just stay home, read the Wikipedia.
But in terms of, like, because, you know, where's the struggle? Where's the conflict? He starts out with a really worldwide famous group and goes on to be worldwide famous even bigger. Is that it?
He breaks away from his father. That's it. Like, I mean, Colman Domingo, who plays Joseph Jackson, is very much cast as the villain. I should talk about as well, and again, weirdness of this film. John Branca, who is his lawyer, who's played by Miles Teller, the scene where they meet for the first time is so strange. It's almost homoerotic.
Yeah.
How much they are vibing off each other. Like, it's very strange. Like, and like, what film would think to put a lawyer, you know, the lawyer of Michael Jackson, bang smack into the middle of the film and be cast by Miles Teller? Like, it's so... You can tell that this film has gone through 100 different iterations. You can tell that the estate got their oar in, that, you know, his lawyers got their oar in.
The bodyguard?
The bodyguard is a character in it as well. Yeah. Like, they are touching on so many things. I keep using that word. But they go through so many things, and it's like, okay, I actually don't know anything about Michael Jackson by the end of this, other than he was very, very talented and he had a crap relationship with his dad. So what?
So isn't that the gold star then? They've done what they want.
They've done what they set out to do.
They just want to reinvent the superstar. They just want you walking away.
And I'm
going,
guessing this music is all
incredible.
Oh, which means everybody's hearing the music and saying, oh, this is fantastic, and it revives the music again.
So every other person, like, marriages, you know, they're walk-on parts?
Literally walk-on parts.
Yeah.
Rod Temperton doesn't even, like, Rod Temperton of Heatwave, an incredible genius, incredible songwriting genius. He's mentioned once. That's it. Steve Lukather in Toto, when he wrote Human Nature, doesn't get mentioned. Like, there are so many parts of the Michael Jackson story that they could have focused on that would have had some kind of authenticity and integrity. If they didn't want to touch on... God, I keep using that word. Do you know what I mean? They could have left that out, but instead they chose to do everything. And by doing everything, they're doing nothing.
But fans are going to
eat it up. They're
going to
eat it up. So what is it?
You are back in his presence for 2 hours.
Yeah, there you go. Similarly, superstar Maura Higgins is joining Dancing with the Stars US. She's big now in America.
She's huge.
Yeah, I love it. And I love that she's leaning into this. She did Celebrity Traders. And like that was a big risk because they didn't really know who she was. They knew who she was off the back of, you know, Love Island and stuff.
Yeah.
She really, the Americans have loved her in Celebrity Traders where she's come second runner up. But this is huge because not only has she been announced as taking part in Dancing with the Stars the next season. Mm. She was the first to be announced. Mm. Like, that is huge. She has become Dancing with the Stars.
She's doing like red carpet. Like, she was doing red carpet for an A24 film.
She was at the Met Opera looking amazing. Yeah. Or no, the Met, not the Met Opera, gala, the gala.
Yeah.
She looked incredible at that.
Fair play.
Yeah. Okay, fair juice. Yeah. And the accent is no difficulty to her. And there's no shade on her at all. But two Americans, you know, they're normally, what are you saying?
She's leaning into it. So it feels like, and I'm not saying she's putting it on because that is her accent.
No, yeah, yeah.
She's not having to tone down her accent. I think the Americans love that. The one thing about Maura Higgins is what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And she's not holding back. She's so excited about this, and she said, I've manifested this and I'm glad it's happening. It probably will be the last reality TV show I do, unless there's another one that comes up that I really want to do. But I'm thrilled for it. It's so great to see that the Americans love her as much as we do. And she's not putting on who she is. She's just being
true
to herself.
No, that is her, yeah.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. Right, and Kylie Minogue is going to... Now, is this about her?
Yes, it is. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was
like, of course. No wonder they got you.
Hometown girl,
Jesus, of course. Yeah.
I'm so excited. It was just announced today. Basically, now, Kylie, I know I'm a bit biased, but she is a superstar. She has had, her career's been going for about 5 decades now. She's had a hit every single decade. She's kept reinventing herself. The reason why I'm excited, and look, it's another Netflix docuseries. So you know that when the talent is involved, you're only going to get part of the story, right? But we will see home videos. We will see interviews. She will touch on her breast cancer, on losses in her life, on her personal life. I am really excited because this is going to be directed by the Emmy and BAFTA Award winner director Michael Hart. The reason why I'm thrilled with him, he did one of my all-time favourite celebrity documentaries. Did you watch Still, the Michael J. Fox documentary?
Oh, yes! Oh,
He's behind that. He's also involved with Beckham as well.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think this is a really good... this could be really, really good. There hasn't been a date announced yet, but... And Kylie, strangely enough, hasn't put it up on her socials yet. I found this out on Netflix Australia and New Zealand, so... I'm excited. I will watch this.
Can I also say, from a wine perspective, her wine range is actually really, really good.
Her rosé.
Genuinely. The Kylie Minogue range of wines is actually really good and huge seller.
Like Kylie.
Particularly in both the Irish and the UK markets.
Which you can't always say about your celebrity
wines. No, a lot of wine, but hers are really the business. Yeah, seriously. So,
are they Australian? I'm not being funny.
I
don't think that. They're not Australian wines, are they?
They're from all over the world.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. She's rosés from the south of France. Yeah, basically the whole range is... It picks each category that's very popular with wine drinkers. So it's you know, wine styles that people really like that are very well made with her name on it. But they're good. It's a good range and it's good quality.
Okay.
Fabulous.
Extraordinary
stuff. Can I give you the tagline?
Yes.
The docuseries celebrates the joy, connection and euphoria that make Kylie unmistakably Kylie.
You're just beaming from energy.
I think Serena's in love. You are listening to the Moncrief Show and you still take a break. Tell us about our second wine, Jane.
We're going the largest island, Italian island in the Mediterranean, is Sicily, and it's really probably since the 1980s one of the best places for wine from Italy. It's very exciting. There's amazing wines coming out of Sicily at the moment. This one is brand new to the Irish market. It's 2025 Cantine Pellegrino.
And the grape variety is Grillo. Now, the Pellegrino family have been making grape, have been growing wine since 1880, so they kind of know what they're doing. But the Grillo grape is native to Sicily, and it's very interesting. And it actually has a muscat parent, so it's quite aromatic. And tends to have quite a high level of sugar. And it's the grape they used to make Marsala. Now, Marsala is a famous fortified wine, which is falling out of fashion now. But actually, legend has it that the grape was used in the production of wine in Roman times, and Maritimo was a particular favourite wine of Julius Caesar. There you go. Yeah, so made from the Grillo grape.
Yeah.
So you're not dealing with muck here now.
No, you know, indeed. So, good celebrity endorsement there.
Basically, it makes a light, fresh, fruit-driven wine with flavours of lemon and green apple. And again, on the nose, you're getting that lovely kind of floral note. Again, that's the muscat kind of parentage showing through. This is quite a light, easy drinking wine style. Lots of citrus fruit. Again, another really good quality Italian wine to enjoy when the sun is shining. So it's a canteen, and you'll get it again from boutique wines and various independent off-licenses.
Okay, very nice indeed, Jean. Well done. Now, Heartstopper, it's like ending with a movie.
With a movie. This is one of my... I know this this series isn't aimed at me, but gosh, I've loved every single minute of it. It's about two teenage boys who are gay. They're in high school, and they're both discovering their sexuality. I'm not spoiling it to say that. Well, maybe I'm. No, I'm not spoiling it to say. It's been out for three seasons.
It's up to you now.
Yeah. So they get together, and it's about their relationship. And I love that one of the boys, their mother was played brilliantly by Olivia Colman in season one. Did she do season two? No, she didn't do season two, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
But the reason why she didn't do season two and season three was she just wasn't available.
Yeah.
So in the movie, and it was odd not having her there. Like, they did bring in an aunt and other family members and stuff.
But where's Mom? She's at the shops again.
You missed that relationship. So the movie, which has had a date set for the 17th of July, they have recast Olivia Colman. And I have to say, it's a hard role to recast, but I love Anna Maxwell-Martin.
Brilliant, isn't she?
She is brilliant. She was in Line of Duty, but what I love her most for...
Motherland. What a show.
Isn't it brilliant? You don't have to be a parent to enjoy the show.
Same.
She's going to play the mother. I think she's going to be brilliant in this. I can't wait. Can't wait to see how they say goodbye to these characters, and I'm thrilled that there's a movie. There's talk about it being shown on the big screen, whether or not it is, I suppose we'll find out closer to the date.
Are there threads to tie up in a movie?
They could have ended it with season three, but I think this will probably just set it up for, it won't be tied up because they're starting their future. Like, they're going off to college and stuff, but, you know, maybe just set it up nicely for their future.
And Derek Jacobi is going to be in it.
Now,
he's like a million years old.
He's still going.
He's a famous actor.
Wasn't he in I, Claudius?
That brilliant series about the family, which had, oh God, I'm terrible on names. He was in a series quite recently, well, in the last 10 years. And I'm sorry, I'm absolutely
I'm like, you know the thing where your man wore the blue jumper and it was a Tuesday?
Don't ask me to review anything other than that, because I'm terrible at it. It was set in the north of England. Is that
any Last Tango in Halifax?
Last Tango in Halifax.
Well done, very good, Brian. Thank you.
And he's 87. He's 87.
Fair dues. Yeah. It'd be kind of Johnny Gielgud kind of.
Very, very John Gielgud, you
know.
Yeah.
I don't know who he's playing, though. I wonder if he's playing like a grandfather or somebody. But yeah.
Well, at 87, that's a given.
Yeah.
A sugar daddy?
The young love interest. But he often plays kind of creepy characters.
So could be a sugar daddy?
Yeah, so I'm kind of, wondering about that. Right. We'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Exit 8. Here's a clip.
Dear Georgina, Aisha, Aisha, Shihou Shushi, Aisha, Ryo Clinic, Koshuni Arbaito, Chikabitsu Mana Aruko, Bohan Kamera.
That was Exit right. 8 there. You probably couldn't understand that man's thick Monaghan accent. what he was talking about. It's a Japanese movie.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a Japanese horror film. It is based on a Japanese horror video game. What happens in the film is this young man is basically getting off a subway in Japan, receives a phone call from his ex-girlfriend who tells him that she's pregnant and that she's at the hospital and is basically trying to figure out what to do next. And then he walks down a corridor and he then realizes that he is actually trapped in the same corridor.
Okay.
So the rule, he then finds his way to this sort of poster that tells him that he has to walk through the corridor. If he spots an anomaly, he has to turn around and go back. If he spots no anomalies, he must continue forward. He must do this 8 times in order to escape the sort of trapped reality that he's in. Now, this is the thing, it's a new kind of subgenre of horror called liminal horror. And what that effectively means is that it's places that are in bright light but are completely empty and devoid of people. So the idea is essentially that you're looking at something and it looks so sterile and so clean, but there is just that like really like creeping sense of dread. Have you ever been in a shopping centre when it's empty?
Yeah.
And you're just like, there's somebody else in here. I don't know where they are, but I know they're in here and they're coming right for me and I can feel it and they're just right behind my ear. That's what liminal horror is. There's a film coming out pretty soon as well called The Backrooms, which is kind of based on this kind of thing. But Exit 8 was the first sort of video game that had it. And this is the first adaptation of a liminal horror kind of thing. What I would say about this film is that you hear, like, the concept is wafer thin. Like, I mean, it is wafer thin. But what it does so well is the fact that even though it's a repetition kind of thing and it's just you're walking, the character is walking through it and so on and so forth, you yourself are actually taking part in it. You're looking at the walls and you're like, I think I saw that poster move. I think I saw the eyes in that move. And it's like, oh God, is there ants coming out of that door? That door wasn't open the last time you walked through. So you're actively participating in it as well. And that's always been the thing about video game adaptations is that they tend to specifically focus on the intellectual property and the characters and getting those parts right. And then taking the story and adapting that into a film to the detriment, I think, of leaving out the part that makes these video games so good is that there is a participatory, there's an active part of it.
It's clever.
And this film does it really, really well. And, you know, obviously that's not going to work for every single video game adaptation. I mean, how are you going to have The Last of Us? Like, what, you're going to have zombies coming out of the screen? Of course you're not.
Yeah.
But for something like this, it works. And it does share kind of common DNA with Paranormal Activity as well, wherein you're looking at a static scene and you're waiting for something to come out. And then your mind then is kind of playing tricks on you and you're seeing things that aren't necessarily there. And that's a difficult thing to do because very often is the case with these kind of films is that, you know, they're micro budget. So they're really just cutting corners wherever they are. But this film does it so well that, I mean, I don't know how much it was made for. I think it was, I want to say like $1 million, $2 million or something like that. You would have no idea. And if they were to make an American remake, which I swear to God, I hope they don't, it would strip out any of the subtlety. It would strip out any of the parts that make it good. You will have to travel for this. It's in select cinemas. But if you're looking for a unique horror experience, this is absolutely worth the watch.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people might have seen, finally, that Madonna did make it. Was it a surprise appearance at Coachella?
It was a surprise appearance.
And the only one in which we'll see her in that outfit.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
This is really upsetting because she played Coachella 20 years ago in the same outfit. After she performed, she said she was thrilled. It was a full circle moment. But it's hit differently now because she's discovered that the vintage pieces she wore actually went missing. So at the start it was thought, you know, maybe it's been stolen and stuff. But no, police have investigated. They said it hasn't been stolen. The last time it was seen was after 7 o'clock. It was on a golf cart in the grounds at 1:30. So could you imagine you were driving that golf cart and the pieces just fell off. They don't know if that's what's happened, but basically they've just gone missing and she's just asking for them back.
Okay, so they might like turn up in a charity store or someplace.
Could you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh, God. So anyway, hopefully she gets that.
No, but like it was a surprise performance with Sabrina Carpenter. I saw one tweet of a fella going, who's this Madonna? Is she for old people?
Yeah. You know what was really upsetting? If you watch it back, like I was so excited and singing at the top of my lungs.
Everyone's on their phones.
Yeah, if you see the I'm a Prayer, which was iconic, They were on their phones. There was no response. And you're just like, oh, my gosh, this is Madonna, people. And it was actually good.
Did you think, Brian?
And Vogue?
I would have preferred, like, you know, one of the other songs from Bedtime Stories. That's my favourite Madonna album.
Yeah.
But, it's very sad. I mean, I hope they don't make that film about her, though. Because, like, remember there was this talk that they were going to make a Madonna biopic and she was going to direct it.
But it's happening because there's been photos of herself and Julia Garner.
Yeah.
And it's getting closer and closer. That are happening.
Yeah,
I think it might be more a docuseries rather than a film.
That's going to be a mess.
I'm not dead yet. They're calling you Serena, Brian, and Jean. Thank you all very much. That's our lot for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks in at mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.